Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
If I told you that a wrestler was going to debut on the main roster and win the WWE or Universal title in less than a month, you'd spit in my face. That would be very uncouth of you, but I would also kind of understand. It sounds like gibberish, and you would be so offended the only possible reaction would be saliva exiting your mouth and smashing me in the eye. Thing is, does happen. In fact, sometimes 30 days is actually quite a long time for someone to rise up the card, proving there is no rhyme or reason to WWE's madness. If they like an individual or something makes sense, the rule book goes out the window and it's all hands on deck, or it would be if there was a ship involved. No, I don't know either. I'm Simon from What Culture, and this is the 10 fastest pushes in WWE history. Number 10, Sergeant Slaughter. So if we're going on what technically happened, Sergeant Slaughter initially arrived in WWE around 3,826 days before his first WWE title win. That ain't all that speedy. But when we look into history, we see there were plenty of gaps in between all that, including a four-year hiatus between 1986 and 1990. And furthermore, when he did eventually return, it was in a drastically different capacity. Having written to Vince McMahon expressing his interest in coming back, this time Vince would have Slaughter return with a staunch anti-American gimmick. So in August 1990, he walked back onto the WWE Wrestling Challenge set, but as that was a taping, it didn't air on TV until the 9th of September. With that said, when he won the championship at the 1991 Royal Rumble, which happened on the 19th of January, it was just 132 days to get to the top. Personally, it may have been a long road for Sarge, but in terms of his Middle East sympathizing character, he rocketed through the ranks like fire. Number 9, the Iron Sheik. Another wrestler whose major push arrived during a later stint with the company, the Iron Sheik had actually competed with the WWE for 12 months across 1979 and 1980, so yes, there was 1,776 days before he ultimately became the champ. However, during this time, he was performing as the Great Hussein Arab as opposed to the Iron Sheik, and in my world, a name change means we hit restart on a concept, and therefore all the numbers go back to zero as well. You may disagree. That's what the comments are for. His first appearance in WWE as this guy came on the 2nd of August 1983 at the WWF Championship Wrestling taping, although again, that didn't air till 18 days later. After a 10-match winning streak, he was soon afforded a title shot at Bob Backlund's belt. He was actually unsuccessful the first time, but shortly after changed all that at Madison Square Garden on the 26th of December 1983. That win clocked in at 128 days after his televised debut, until Hulkamania targeted Sheik's reign and blasted it into dust. Number 8, Ric Flair. Yeah. When Ric Flair signed for the WWE in August 1991, he was already the man. Everyone knew the Nature Boy, so he was never going to come across as some jobber. That would have been dumb, but he still won the World Championship up there in New York less than 4 months into his run. Given he was a WCW boy through and through, it's pretty good. If you want to get technical again, Flair had already debuted with the WWE once before. 15 years prior to all this, he'd appeared for the company at Madison Square Garden in a couple of throwaway matches. Although it's safe to say the Ric Flair of 1976 was very different to the Ric Flair of 1991. Coming back with all the rage at the WWF Superstars taping on the 9th of September 1991, which aired on 28th of September, a run of wins on TV followed before he entered a house show program with Hulk Hogan, who at the time was the champ. Clearly a title reign was on the horizon, and that proved to be the case on the 19th of January 1992, where, as we know, Flair won the Royal Rumble, and with it, the vacant title 113 days after his TV debut. His run should have been better than it was, but who cares? It's Ric Flair. He can do whatever he wants. Number 7, Bruno Sammartino. When Bruno Sammartino first won the WWE title, he kept it for a staggering 2,803 days. That's 7.5 years. It did not take him that long to get it, though. After a few appearances for the company under the Capital Wrestling Corporation banner, Sammartino mostly competed for the NWA until Vince McMahon Sr. broke away to form the Worldwide Wrestling Federation. McMahon was able to tempt Bruno across with the law of a title at some point. Boy, howdy did that work. That did mean that on the 2nd of February 1963, the Italian made the first official appearance of his legendary WWE career in a 2-out-of-3 falls match with Buddy Rogers for the gold. He actually lost by 2-1, because of course, that's what always happens in 2-out-of-3 falls matches. Just over 3 months later, mind, he'd be back to finish the job, although it wasn't under the most straightforward of circumstances. Rogers, the defending king, had apparently suffered a heart attack the week prior and was in no fit to stage a fight. As such, he was defeated in just 48 seconds, crowning Sammartino only the second WWE champion in history, just over 100 days after he debuted. Then look what he did. That will never ever happen again. Number 6, JBL. It's another of those where you're free to guff and guffaw because, yes, JBL was not a new face when he first won the WWE title. However, do you remember how much he did change from being Bradshaw to this new gimmick? It was like night and day, and I bet you could have convinced someone they were different people in 2004. Gone was the beer-drinking, cigar-smoking, card-playing bar dweller, and in his place was a suit-wearing, Wall Street-trading, Mexican-hating tycoon. He even had a cabinet protecting him instead of his long-running buddy Farouk, and really had done a complete 180. It all worked as well. Fans hated JBL, and it got so bad he was pushed into the main event, where he defeated Eddie Guerrero in a Texas bull rope match at the Great American Bash for the title. So on one hand, this victory came 3,074 days after he first debuted as Justin Hawk Bradshaw, but it was a mere 94 days since JBL was born, and that's ridiculous, especially because in his first incarnation, he never even got a sniff of world title gold. Number 5, Buddy Rogers. Buddy Rogers has already made an appearance on this list, but the man actually went one better than Sammartino, winning the WWE Championship just 90 days after he debuted. Or at least that's what the company's history books will tell you, if those things even exist. The story surrounding Rogers' title win is actually a messy one. The WWE claims that Rogers became the first ever WWE Champion on the 25th of April 1963 after winning a tournament in Rio de Janeiro. However, Rogers had been appearing as a World Heavyweight Champion since his WWF debut on the 25th of January 1963. This was because technically he was still the NWA champion, the organization the company had in fact split from in order to compete under their own banner. Don't make it easy, do they? I just said all of that, and now my brain hurts. Add to that the fact that Rogers was another to have previously appeared for Capital Wrestling Corporation, and the exact dates for both his title win and his debut are somewhat hazy. Either way, the most logical course of action is to go by the date at which the WWE claims he won the tournament in Rio and the date of his first official appearance, and the difference between that is 90 days, the end. Number 4, Pedro Morales. Thankfully, we're back to logic now, as the dates are far more sensical for Pedro Morales, as he had a blistering 79-day push to the title. Morales had featured for the company in a rather more low-key capacity in the mid-1960s, but after a 5-year absence, he re-debuted on the 21st of November 1970, where he joined Chief Dre Strongbow to face the Mongols. He had a brief stint with the short-lived WWF United States Heavyweight Championship belt before he challenged Ireland Koloff for the big one on the 8th of February 1971. Morales was victorious, bringing Koloff's reign to an end after just 3 weeks, and in turn, made Koloff one of the first transitional champs in history. In short, everyone needed to get the title off Bruno, and no other good guy could have done that, because they would have been murdered. Morales then held the title for 1,027 days in total. Jeez. Number 3, Finn Balor. Ah, Finn. When you set your sights on Seth Rollins and the Universal title at SummerSlam 2016, things were so exciting, especially as he'd only been on the roster 27 days. Surely there was no way the Prince of New Japan and the King in NXT could make the jump to Raw and become the inaugural holder of this shiny new red belt. Well, it most definitely was. Absolutely smashing it when he was first called up, Balor did indeed jump from developmental to champion in less than a month after he beat Rollins at the hottest event of the summer 2 years ago. It was a proper feel-good moment, which is why it was also heartbreaking that he had to give it up the following night after suffering a shoulder injury. Since then, we all have our opinions on what has happened with the Demon. Seems lost in the mid-card if nothing else, but no one can take this away from him. He's a history maker in this regard, and he shares it with very high company because... Number 2, Hulk Hogan. Hulk Hogan was always going to be on this list somewhere. It was a big deal in the WWE the moment he walked through the door. He does not, however, make it into the number one spot. Hogan showed his face for the first time in the WWE in December 1979. Other than a few count-out victories over then-champion Bob Backlund, he didn't really do much of anything. After some time in Japan, though, he returned in late 1983, having been handpicked by Vince McMahon to help change the wrestling landscape forever. This, of course, prompted the start of perhaps the biggest push in company history, as Hulkamania started running wild and propelled the WWE into its first golden era, with the golden-haired warrior front and center. Here's where it gets fun. The official return of Hogan came on the 27th of December 1983, when he defeated Bill Dixon at a TV taping that would air on New Year's Day 1984. Keep that in mind. A couple of days later, Hogan teamed with Backlund to face Mr. Fuji and Tiger Chung Lee. Then before he knew it, he'd beaten the Iron Sheik for the WWE title at Madison Square Garden on the 23rd of January 1984, 22 days after his televised return. But the key term there is televised return. If we take the day he actually appeared in the WWE ring, it's 27 days, and you know who that was the same as? Finn Balor. So Finn Balor is the new Hulk Hogan, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks for coming. Number 1, Billy Graham. Superstar Billy Graham's push to the title happened so fast, basically no time passed from him arriving to winning it. As with many on this list, Graham's major push had been preceded by a much less successful spell with the company. On occasion, he tangled with San Martino, but had nothing to show for it and eventually left in May 1976. When he re-debuted for the WWF the following year, it was under rather different circumstances, because he'd be winning the championship. Graham has since revealed that it was agreed with Vince Sr. that he would take the title from San Martino and hold on to the strap for almost a year, before eventually dropping it to Bob Backlund. All of this was also agreed upon a full 365 days ahead of when it actually took place. So on the 30th of April 1977, it was Graham's first match back, the plan was acted out, and he won the title on his very first night in the company. As far as pushes to the title go, they don't get any quicker than that. Imagine we did this today. People would go crazy.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.